Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Entrada's ongoing series of Manufacturing in North America. My name is Doug Donahue. I am a president and a principal of the Entrada Group. Today, we have Harry Mosier from the Reshoring Initiative. He is the founder and the president of this organization. Harry is also a graduate of MIT and the University of Chicago. Good morning, Harry. We appreciate you coming along. With the Reshoring Initiative now in its fourth year, can you give us a snapshot of your progress? For example, do you have any idea of the number of American companies that have actually reshored from overseas, say, in the past 5 years? How are things trending?
About 300 companies in total, U.S. companies that have reshored. In addition, maybe a couple of hundred foreign companies that have done foreign direct investment, so German, French, Italian, Mexican, you know, what have you, investing in the U.S., We focus more on the reshoring aspect, but both of those bring jobs. To give you a feeling for the overall trend, if you compare 2003 to 2013, in 2003 we were offshoring maybe 150,000 manufacturing jobs a year from the U.S., so losing that many and reshoring essentially none. And by 2013, the two trends, offshoring and reshoring, were about in balance, around 40,000 a year each. So we've gone from losing 150,000 a year to breaking even. So we'd say the bleeding has stopped, but we'd still like to bring back the 3 or 4 million manufacturing jobs that are offshored.
When companies are relocating production back to the U.S., typically, where are they setting up? And are there any sort of industries that are best suited for reshoring?
Tendency to set up in the South, so the Southeast and Texas, for example, because those areas are the lower wage, non-union, lower tax, you know, generally more flexible locations. Transportation's easier. Also the Midwest, and the Midwest because that's still the manufacturing heartland. So if the companies bring back the manufacturing and put it in the old factory or near the old factory, near the headquarters, then the Midwest tends to get it. Of those two, the big factories tend to go into the South. The 1,000-person factories go into the Southeastern and Texas. Maybe the middle size come back to the Midwest, and then smaller ones perhaps to the Northeast or the West Coast.
Which aspect of American reshoring have you found the most surprising, or perhaps would have been the least expected for our listeners?
The breadth of the trend. There's I think the third or fourth highest industry category is apparel. Looking at it, who would have thought that significant amounts of apparel would come back? Now, it's still tiny, it's minuscule, but it's percentage-wise growing the fastest relative to where it was, say, 5 years ago. I'd say also the visibility that it's achieved. Six years ago, I'd find maybe one or two reshoring articles a week, and now I find two or three a day. So we've had dramatically increased visibility in the media.
A survey this year by Thomas Nett found that one impediment to ongoing manufacturing growth in the U.S. is a shortage of talent. Is this real or perceived?
Absolutely real. Almost in the depth of the recession, there were shortages, and it's only gotten worse since. There's some shortage in engineers, scientists, mathematicians, people like that, but there's severe shortages in toolmakers, precision machinists, welders, et cetera. Various surveys show anywhere from 300,000 to 600,000 openings in manufacturing, job openings not filled because companies can't find the people, and a lot of it's due to the skill shortage. Fortunately, community colleges are responding. Some high schools, companies are starting apprentice programs. So we're starting the long journey back, but it's going to take years, probably decades, to get to overcome that talent shortage.
I know your top priority is returning manufacturing jobs to the U.S., but I'd like to hear a little bit your opinion on this quote I'm going to read to you. This was from a study called Working Together, done by the Woodrow Wilson Center in 2011. It goes, "The reality is that China, and to a lesser extent, other emerging suppliers in Asia, represent the largest and most threatening source of competition for the U.S. economy. Due to geographical proximity and the number of key complementary economic cooperation with Mexico is one of the best ways for the United States to improve its global competitiveness and defend American industry." So the question is, to what extent do you agree with this sentiment? Does nearshoring to Mexico, if not to the U.S., bring you closer to your goals?
Absolutely. I agree 100%. My first goal is bring work back to the U.S. I'm an American. My family's been here for, I don't know, 300 years or something like that. So this is clearly my first goal. But the U.S. is unambiguously better off with work coming back from Asia to Mexico than it is with the work staying in Asia or Mexico. And there's some work that is so labor intense that no matter how well you automate it, no matter how well you train your team, you cannot justify bringing it back to the U.S. because our wage rates are so much higher. And whereas if that work comes to Mexico, then a couple of things. First, the U.S. supply chains are shorter, so the U.S. facility that, say, does the assembly of the end product is more sustainably located here because it has its supply chain closer to it, so it's more likely to stay here instead of that moving offshore. Second, the product that's produced in Mexico typically has a higher content of U.S. product within it, and therefore the U.S. has benefited. And third, to the extent that the Mexican economy improves and the average incomes go up, the consumers there buy more American-made product than the Chinese or the Indians do. So almost any way you look at it, the U.S. is better off with work in Mexico than in China or India. And eventually, as the Mexican wages go up, then we can reshore it back to the U.S.
That's I like that concept. When a company nearshores production, say, from China to Mexico, in the vast majority of cases, the engineering work is not reshored to Mexico. It is reshored to the U.S. In fact, a study from the National Bureau of Economic Research revealed that every Mexican good exported to the U.S., 40% is of American content, compared with 25% for Canadian goods, 4% for Chinese good. In your opinion, are the U.S. and Mexico complementary to each other for manufacturing, particularly when you consider the different strengths of each country and the mix of skill sets of each workforce?
Clearly, there's good complementary benefits between the two. The Mexicans are still obviously at a significantly lower wage rate, up now about the wage rate of China, and they eliminate that much of the logistical penalty associated with China or India. On the other hand, the Mexican skill sets are going up, and there is some high tech work, aerospace components, or certainly a lot of automotive production going into Mexico. So it isn't all. It isn't basket weaving anymore. So there's a convergence going on, but my anticipation would be that as the skill sets and the technology gets to the U.S. level, that the wages will get close enough to the U.S. level that it'll be a good partnership. We think of it as if you can't get the work back to the U.S. from China or India, and you can get, say, part of it to Mexico and part of it to the U.S., it's better for the U.S. to be part of the winning team than all of the losing team.
You alluded to European companies and even Asian companies setting up in North America, as well as one of the ones that you found, industries that you found interesting, was apparel. How much of this is being driven by cost increasing in Asia? And how much of this is manufacturers realizing that you can't, the world is not flat. It's actually regional.
The main factors driving work here, both reshoring and foreign direct investment, are wages going up in China and the other developing countries. They've risen. The labor cost per unit of output today is four times as high in China as it was 14 years ago. So dramatic increases. So number one is labor increase. Number two is recognizing the economic benefits of proximity, all the costs, risks, strategic impacts that are achieved by having a short supply chain, by producing regionally or locally. And as companies have started to recognize how many negative impacts they've had at a distance, they're putting more value on local, and therefore, as the wage gap reduces, and they see that all these other costs tend to now, in some cases, overcome that reduced wage gap. And so those things together, plus there's increased interest in a Made in America product. So when my wife bought her car, I didn't care which brand it was, but it had to have been assembled in the United States. And there's more increasingly people in the U.S., and I suspect in Canada and Mexico, saying, I'd rather have a product made in the country. I know the quality, and I know that it's helping keep my neighbors employed.
Harry, I really appreciate your time today. I think a lot of our listeners would like to know what services and resources does the Reshoring Initiative provide to help companies decide about reshoring and nearshoring?
Yeah, a number of things, and thanks for asking. Most important, we have the Total Cost of Ownership Estimator, which is a free software on our website that anybody can come in and use and calculate all of the costs, so not just the price. Start with the price from each of the two sources, say China and the U.S. or Mexico, and then add in duty, freight, packaging, carrying cost of inventory, travel costs, all intellectual property risk, all the relevant costs and risks, and decide by looking at total cost where the product should be produced or sourced. So that's number one. And it works for the U.S. and it works for Mexico. They should work equally well for both locations. Second, we have a library of 1,800 articles about reshoring, and we cover U.S., Canada, and Mexico. And so one can go in there and look for all the cases of reshoring that have occurred in any state or in Canada or in Mexico to see what's happening. We have a case studies feature where if a company has reshored to the U.S. or nearshored to Mexico, they can go in and report that case, and it creates a PDF that we post and they post. They get free publicity for what they've done. We also are supporting a software out of the Commerce Department and the University of Lausanne. It's called the Cost Differential Frontier, and it helps companies understand how when they have a shorter supply chain, a shorter lead time, that they can afford to pay more in the closer location because of the savings on not having to discount things at the end of the season or savings from not running out when the demand is high. So we've got a series of things that can help them make a better decision.
And where can our listeners find these resources?
At our website, it's at www.reshorenow.org, or they can email me at harry.moser, that's M-O-S-E-R, at reshorenow.org. Happy to help them. Everything on the website's free, and you know, general discussions with me are free.
Terrific. Harry, again, we really appreciate your time. Our listeners enjoy these subjects, and I wish you the best of luck.